is the Citizens Council Forum, the American viewpoint with a Southern accent, presented by the Citizens Councils of America on behalf of affiliated state organizations throughout the South. The Citizens' Councils are dedicated to states' rights and racial integrity, to individual liberty, and to race relations based on common sense, not on the power politics of left-wing pressure groups. The Citizens' Councils are primarily a means of mobilizing public opinion. Informed people will not surrender their freedom. Now, from Washington, here is your host for Citizens' Council Forum, Dick Morphew.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Today, we're happy to be talking with Representative Jamie Whitten from Charleston, Mississippi. Mr. Whitten, a Democrat, member of the House Appropriations Committee, specializing in agricultural and military appropriations. Mr. Whitten, very happy to have you with us today, sir.
Dick's pleasure to be on your program.
I'd like to talk to you for a few moments, Congressman Whitten, about what is referred to in all across the nation is the so-called farm problem. Of course, I know everyone knows there is a farm problem, but what's behind it?
Dick, I, as you know, have served as chairman of the committee that handles all the Department of Agriculture's operations each year. I've been in that capacity about 12, 14 years. Each year we review the overall cost of the program, and I think everyone does agree that there is a farm problem. I think most folks don't realize or don't stop to recognize that it's a national problem. I think that any study of the history of our country will teach us that in the long run, there's got to be a balance between agriculture, industry, and labor. The underlying cause, and I have recently been preparing an argument, really, to be presented to one of the national organizations in September at the National Convention, in which I try to analyze what's brought about the problem and to point out some of the dangers involved in it. You might be interested in what I attempted to make a catchy opening, in which I will point out that it takes so few of us to provide food, clothing, and shelter for all of us, for the rest of us, that it enables the rest of us to produce automobiles, television, and the thousand and one things that make for our high standard of living. But in the process of having so few, that is 12% of our people provide this for all of us. You don't find that anywhere else in the world. That it means that 12% have lost their influence in the legislative bodies and in governmental decisions. That it's endangering not only them, but in the process, it's endangering this high standard of living. I believe I can prove that. For instance, anyone who analyzes our drop in farm income is bound to match against it the actions of the government. Now, this drop in farm income down from 50 cents of the dollar to 38 cents in the last 8 years, it was helped along by actions of the Congress and of the President. For instance, during that period, the Congress raised minimum wages from 75 cents to a dollar, and through the bargaining power of labor unions given by law, income of the factory worker increased from $1.46 to $2.29 per hour. The same Congress and the same government reduced price supports for agriculture 20%. Now, anyone who knows at least a little bit about economics would know that if a group, as did happen, shifts that much of the income dollar, 20% cut in agricultural prices, and a more than that increase in labor income, that it, of course, would shift from one to the other that much of the income dollar. Now, the fallacy of those that help bring that about, or the fallacious arguments they make, or that which they fail to recognize, is the fact that fewer farmers does not mean that you can get by on less gross income. As the number of farmers gets smaller, the total investment required to farm has more than doubled. And as the amount of capital required has doubled, competition for capitals has increased interest rates from 3% to more than 6%. And anyone who knows agriculture, if your investment is more than double what it formerly was, your risks are more than doubled. So fewer farmers might easily require more gross income to offset increased capital and increased risk. Most folks overlook that.
Well, in other words, it's a simple matter that nowadays only a relatively small percentage of the population, 12%, is actually engaged in raising the food and the fiber that this country requires. Now, the rest of the country is thereby freed and made able to produce things to raise the standard of living in other areas.
That's right.
But in order for this 12% to continue production, they must use much more mechanization than has been used in the past, which increases their net operating costs to the point where they must have a higher income.
And then in order to farm with that high-priced equipment, you've got to own about twice as much land. And land's worth about twice as much per acre. So when you multiply that four by the original investment, you can just see where we are. But the point I make is that our free enterprise is free only under the laws that Congress and the legislatures have passed. And if we check it, we've affected that free enterprise by minimum wages, the right to organize, the right to strike, the right of industry to make a markup based on total cost. So our enterprise is free only within the context or under those laws. And I say that in the Congress, where these are decided, that the farmers being down to 12%, his voice is getting weaker and weaker in the legislative bodies where these advantages are declared fair by law. And if you match the present farm situation with that that prevailed 8 or 10 years ago, and then look and see, well, now what did we do as a nation through law during that period? You found that by law, we shifted more of the income dollar to labor and reduced that going to agriculture. And if you look at that, I don't see how anybody could be surprised at agriculture now getting less and less and the other two elements getting more and more.
Well, this would seem to place the farmers of the nation in quite a position. It would seem to confront them with the dual dilemma of rising costs and lower incomes. What can they do and what are they doing about this?
Well, they're doing the best they can, but if we could get the public to recognize the facts, to accept the facts that actually exist so that the public would have some sympathy, I think that would help to correct it. Just like this statement that I make about the increase in the part going to labor of the national income dollar. Labor's share through these laws is carried forward as a part of the retail price to the consumer. It's not identified as something resulting from law. Unfortunately, as through that means you give more and more of the income dollar to labor as a part of the retail price and not so identified, and give the farmer less and less, you have somewhat replaced the farmer's loss with direct payments from the Treasury, which really are to offset this that was taken away by other laws, but it's identified as something you give him. And yet with all of that, the farm income has dropped from about 14 and four-tenths billion dollars in 1952 until last year it was something over 10 billion.
You think that there have been some instances where the government has meddled excessively in the affairs of the farmer, in the idea of controlling rigidly the acreage that he may plant in certain crops, in the areas where they encourage smaller plantings but yet result in larger surpluses, for example?
You know, they say each new generation invites a depression and has a war because they won't learn the lessons of the past. With time, we've forgotten that there's a whole lot of different kinds of agriculture. There's very sound reason for having firm price supports on basic commodities. A better word would be, say, storable commodities. You can't have price supports on storable commodities without having some limitation on production. For instance, if you make too much cotton this year, that cotton would last for 50 years and be in the way of 49 crops. So if you're going to have price supports, in my opinion, on storable commodities where 1 year's overproduction can affect you for years, you've got to tie two such supports. A limitation on how much is produced. On the other hand, if you had an overproduction of peaches this year, they wouldn't necessarily be in the way of next year's market, certainly not the market 5 years from now. So you have to draw distinctions between storable commodities and non-storable commodities. With time, the public has forgotten that. And we point out now that our big problem is in the area of storable commodities. It is wheat, corn, and grain. But we overlook the fact that our government's been giving tremendous price supports without any limitation on corn acreage, and with limitation on acreage rather than on export production in the other. So much of it comes because we've been trying to give one without requiring a restriction on the other.
Well, now, is there a way out of this predicament to which the farmers now find themselves in?
There certainly is, but they will have to have votes in the Congress, which means you have to have an understanding of the 88% of the American people who are non-farmers. They've got to realize that they're in this thing along with the farmers. It just takes a few years for them to feel it, and they will feel it if they don't realize what's happening.
Because certainly if a farmer is not operating his farm at a profit, he's not going to be a customer for the things that our factories produce.
That's true, and he'll hold on to the point that he wears out his land, and then we'll be drifting toward the Eastern Asia and Far East section, where it takes about 50 to 75% of the people just to produce food and fiber.
Well, Congressman Whitten, are there other areas in which you feel the political influence has shifted in this nation in the past few years?
I don't think anyone can study the Congress without realizing that organized labor has gotten to be a bigger and bigger factor in the decisions that are made by the Congress and by the administrative or the executive departments. That comes from organization, comes from numbers, and comes from prosperity. It is a fact, however a person might stand on whether it should be or not.
But don't you feel that perhaps too many of us are identifying ourselves as members of one group or another when it comes time to vote on issues or on candidates? People nowadays seem to regard themselves as members of certain pressure blocks rather than regarding themselves as Americans and going to the polls and voting for what's best for the country.
Well, I think that's to a great degree true, but on the other hand, in any particular area, the average person in that area, including a congressman, he usually comes here reflecting to start with the feelings of his people because he's one of them, and if we've got more of that kind of people engaged in that, they'll have more representatives in Congress, and usually a man reflects the feelings of his people because he is one of them.
Congressman Whitten, thank you very much for being with us today. Look forward to having you again with us very soon.
Pleasure to be here.
Today we've been talking with Representative Jamie L. Whitten, Democrat from Charleston, Mississippi. Join us again next week at the same time when we'll be back with another program in your Citizens Council Forum series. Till then, this is Dick Morphew saying thanks a lot for being with us. So long, everybody.
This forum has been presented by the Citizens Councils of America. We Americans are threatened with the loss of many of our hard-won freedoms, the historic right of each sovereign state to govern itself without interference from political courts, the right of the individual to choose his own associates without the prodding of federal bayonets, and the right of each citizen to make up his own mind in the American way, free from alien propaganda. Each of us has a job to do. Your support is needed. For information, write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. We will be happy to send you, without obligation, copies of our literature showing how you can help. Just write Citizens Council, Jackson, Mississippi. The South is organizing. Join with those who stand publicly, fearlessly, and determined that these freedoms will be maintained.